Nixon Gwilt Law presents Legally FemTech, hosted by Bethany Corbin. Bethany is a healthcare innovation attorney who works with new and innovative health tech companies that are revolutionizing women's healthcare and improving women's lives. In this podcast, Bethany discusses the practical, legal, and ethical aspects of FemTech with the industry's most important voices. This podcast is not intended as legal advice and is not an endorsement of any product or company. Now, here's your host.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Legally FemTech. Today, I'm excited to talk with Kate Batts, who is the managing partner of Longevity Capital and the director of FemTech Analytics. In this episode, Kate and I are going to provide a short overview of the FemTech industry, covering key basics that include FemTech fundamentals, like what factors distinguish FemTech companies from other health tech companies. We'll talk about the FemTech investment landscape, key concerns for FemTech founders, high-level FemTech trends, and more. This is a great episode for those who want to know more about the FemTech industry or who are interested in starting a company that is committed and dedicated to women's health. So I'd like to start first by just asking you, what are the distinguishing factors of a FemTech company? So in other words, right, when does a company that might be in health technology really cross that threshold into being categorized as a FemTech company?
Well, I think we should first start with the definition of FemTech. It's a relatively new definition. It was coined in 2013. At FemTech Analytics, we define FemTech as technology focused on empowering women's health and well-being. And it really encompasses a full range here. So we're talking about products, services, applications, software, medical devices, telehealth, wearables, et cetera, et cetera. So when we include a company in our FemTech Analytics reports, we basically would like to see one or more of the following components. It's either the company that is solely focused on FemTech as defined, or if it's the company that has a subsidiary or subdivision that focuses on FemTech. That's a short description, I would say.
No, that's helpful. I want to make sure that everybody has the same terminology in mind as we're talking. So that's very helpful, Kate. So, you know, you've given an overview kind of what FemTech is, but describe the current FemTech industry for us. So for example, you know, what kind of products are you seeing out there? Are there certain product types that are more common in FemTech? What does that landscape really look like?
Yes, well, I think it's important to note that the FemTech landscape, the way we see it today, is relatively young. I mean, it was only in 2010 when FDA authorized drug trials for women. And previously, it was restricted for females of reproductive age only. So we're talking about, you know, just the 12 years. And then in 2013, we started seeing the first smartphone apps dedicated to fertility. And then in 2016, we started seeing new solutions for pregnancy and breastfeeding. And then now we're actually seeing the emergence of that. So in terms of sectors, of course, the traditional ones which continue to dominate this field is reproductive health and nursing, pregnancy, as well as, of course, menstrual health and menopause. And if we're talking about the product types, so definitely we're talking about the products, services, and applications. And I think it's also important to note that only 4% of tech investment in life sciences goes to FemTech. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed, and this sector is definitely underserved.
Wow, only 4%. Why do you think that is? I mean, is there a reason that women's health companies are not getting the attention that they deserve and women's health research isn't being prioritized?
I think that women's health was traditionally, you know, serviced, so to speak, in such traditional sectors such, you know, pregnancy and nursing and reproductive health for obvious reasons. I mean, you can talk about, you know, societal stigma or women's health, you know, not being so much at the front of everyone's attention. So it's good to see that we're now also talking about mental health, sexual well-being, as well as a number of other new segments. In fact, we introduce our classification of FemTech subsectors, and we do include, of course, the traditional ones such as, you know, reproductive health and contraception, pregnancy and nursing, menstruation, menopause, sexual wellness, mental health, but we also have women's wellness, longevity, and of course, general healthcare as well. But this has been traditionally the case.
Interesting. And just kind of on that topic, you know, what are some of the key market drivers for femtech that femtech companies and founders should really be aware of as they're trying to raise capital in this type of an environment?
We actually did a survey at the end of 2021 at Femtech Analytics, and we reached out to the influencers in the field. One of the key concerns and trends was that it was important to attract more funding. And for that, you also need to attract more attention to the topic of femtech in itself. There is a good trend that we see is that compared to, let's say, you know, 2016, when there was only about $500 million in femtech investment, we're now seeing the market size in 2022, approximately $50 billion, and it's projected to grow to $75 billion in 2025. I still think we can do much better, but at least you see the progress there. I've mentioned that in addition to traditional sectors such as reproductive health, pregnancy and nursing, we're also seeing other aspects included in the radar, such as mental health, sexual wellness, and a number of others. In terms of the other trends, we are seeing application of AI. And of course, we see more of telehealth. Of course, this was partially influenced by the pandemic. So these are some of the few trends. And for your audience, I encourage them to discover the trends in more detail in our open access analytical reports, which you can find at femtech.health. We provide the detailed analytics there on that.
Yeah, I've read the report. It's really detailed, really in-depth, and very helpful resource for anybody who's in this space. So highly encourage you to check it out. And Kate, these types of resources for Femtech Analytics, you know, do you put out a report like this every year? What other resources are out there for people who really want to try to understand this space?
Well, let me first tell you a little bit about Deep Knowledge Group, because Femtech Analytics is a strategic analytical subsidiary of Deep Knowledge Group, which has been in operation since approximately 2014. Because Femtech Analytics has been, well, we founded it almost exactly a year ago, June 1st, 2021. And Deep Knowledge Group has always been interested from its inception in longevity, or if it can also otherwise be defined as health span, or living healthier for longer, which of course applies to all genders, but we always wanted to have a specific dedicated subsidiary devoted to female health. I'm glad that we finally were able to do this last year. And our objective was to, well, number one, to educate ourselves about the field, and we engage a number of reputable advisors. Once we, you know, learned the field, we proceeded with a number of open access analytical reports. We try to release them pretty much on a quarterly basis, but sometimes we have an interesting topic, or let's say we would cover femtech in certain regions, like we covered Switzerland, we covered the MENA region. But basically, I think I could say that once a quarter, we try to release the reports. In addition to the reports, these reports are open access and can be found on our website. But also, we were fortunate to invite a number of speakers to our online conferences. So we had three of those, and it actually generated great interest. And that was wonderful to see great speakers, and the audience was invited for free. And we've had great exchange of ideas there.
That's amazing. Yeah, these are some great resources. So anyone interested in femtech, please check it out. I think you're going to really like them. So Kate, I want to go back to something that you were talking about a few moments ago, which is you mentioned telehealth and virtual care being two of the driving factors for femtech. Do you think that's still going to play a role for femtech going forward?
I think so. There were silver linings in the pandemic, right? So as it applies to femtech as well, I think definitely this trend will continue. And I believe that the surveys that we've made confirm that.
That's great. And I know that you were mentioning, right, that you've done these reports and sometimes you focus on specific geographic areas. Where are you seeing the most femtech innovation right now? And why do you think it's in that region?
Well, you know, I would say that there's one very, very obvious trend, that the lion's share of both femtech companies and investments are in the United States. They are followed not so closely, by Europe, specifically UK, sometimes Canada, depending on which subsector we're talking about. And the reasons behind that could be, you know, several. Number one, of course, it's the largest economy. And also it has lots of R&D centers. Well, I'm based in San Francisco Bay Area. So I'm one of the epicenters of innovation. So the fact that there is this VC environment here, as well as excellent academic institutions and the whole ecosystem that helps raising capital, definitely contributes to that. Of course, we also have Boston and a few other clusters as well.
And are the innovations that you're seeing in the U.S., the trends such as reproductive health, the same areas of femtech that are being focused on in other jurisdictions like Europe or Canada?
Yeah, I would say that the trends are general. So because we try to analyze, the amount of investments and as well as the number of companies. So yes, the traditional sectors still lead. And I would say that companies in, U.S. and Europe, they pretty much follow the same trend there. Yes.
Interesting. I know one of the big talking points recently, right, has been the Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs, where federal protection for abortion was removed. And a lot of women in the U.S. right now are concerned about their femtech apps with respect to the privacy and security settings. I'm wondering if you think that would at all impact the landscape of femtech's projected growth in the U.S.
Well, it's hard to tell. It's a very recent decision. So, and we try to stay away from politics. So we'll just analyze the trends and produce analytical report in this regard.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what you find just, with all the articles out there about removing data from femtech apps. I think we have a lot to lose if we abandon femtech now. So I'd be really interested to see how that trend plays out.
One of our goals is to bring more focus to femtech because, it is an underserved sector and, women comprise half of the population. We live longer, not necessarily healthier. And, we have certain specific health needs and they need to be addressed.
Absolutely. So how much revenue would you say that a typical femtech company usually makes? Is it, are we seeing deals that are kind of in the, hundreds of millions or what does that really look like?
No, it's actually, unfortunately, quite modest. We did this survey and the majority of femtech companies, have funding between 1 and 10 million. And there are only a few outliers which are specified in our report that we could see, like what were the largest deals, let's say, in 2021.
And are you starting to see any sizable exits for femtech companies? Is femtech still pretty new so that we haven't seen a lot of exits in that area?
It is pretty new. We are starting to see exits, whether it is an M&A or SPAC. So I don't, remember everything from the top of my head, but we actually did highlight, let's say, the top 5 deals in relevant categories in our report.
That's great. And are there any key obstacles that you're seeing for femtech companies either now or kind of anticipating for the future?
Well, the obstacle clearly, because they only receive 4% of tech investment in life sciences, so obviously there is insufficient funding. But also, the respondents in our survey were highlighting the importance of bringing more attention to femtech, brand recognitions, and related issues.
Is there anything that you think our audience could be doing, whether or not they're just people interested in femtech or femtech founders or individuals working at femtech companies, to help in the goal that you were mentioning of bringing more attention to femtech?
Whether femtech or not, I think it's very important to bring lots of attention to your own health. And personally, for me, when we started the company and when we were also preparing the report, it was very interesting to discover everything that exists in the realm of femtech, whatever aspect applies to a certain person at the most. So if you're personally interested in femtech as a user, I encourage you to look at the subsectors and perhaps you can find something, that is very relevant to you in terms of improvement of health. Personally, I did, and I'm glad that this happened. Also, of course, there's not that many resources devoted to femtech. Obviously there's Google, but, our company is committed to producing these reports regularly, so feel free to share them. There are, of course, other companies that produce analytics as well. So I encourage you to take a look at the work of our colleagues. So that's, I guess, these are my suggestions from the top of my head.
That's fantastic. Anything else that our audience should know or anything that they should be doing with respect to femtech at this point?
Well, I guess it depends whether are you a startup, are you an investor, or are you a user? So I think important thing to know is that it is at least good to see that we now have very rapidly developing sector of femtech, and it's actually its growth rate is about 13% per year, starting from 2013, I believe. So it's good that we have this sector, and it's not just pregnancy, nursing, and reproductive health. It would be great to see more companies in this space. I believe we found about 1,100 companies, and we created an interactive mind map in the report, kind of like showing where the most companies belong in terms of subsectors. So for educational and visual purposes, it's, you know, interesting to see that this sector is growing, but I think that definitely there's room to grow.
Fantastic. Well, this has been so great, Kate. I think this is a lot of information that gives us a great understanding of the current femtech landscape. The insights in your report are invaluable. So really hope that our listeners will check that out. And I can't wait to see the next report that you all release.
Absolutely. And we would love to invite you to one of our next online conferences, which will take place later this year. And I wanted to thank you for the great work that you're doing, because you are one of the influencers contributing to further recognition of femtech, which I think is very important.
Oh, thank you, Kate. That is so nice to hear. And we could not do it without all the work of your company. So love this partnership. I hope to have you back on the show to talk about the next report that comes out and the fun insights that you've found and the trends. So very much looking forward to seeing what the future holds.
Absolutely. And likewise.
And to all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in today. We really hope that you found this information valuable and that you'll tune into the next episode.
Thanks for listening to Legally Femtech with Bethany Corbin. To connect with Bethany, follow Femtech Lawyer on Twitter and Instagram. Visit her website at femtechlawyer.com and connect with her on LinkedIn. If you found value in this show, we'd really appreciate a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Until next time.